13, the last 3 weeks. This will be our fourth week in this chapter, focusing on the first seven verses of the chapter. Lord willing, we will finish up this section this morning, and then next week be able to move on to the rest of the chapter, as well as the rest of the book of Romans. We've had a good study so far. I appreciate your indulgence. I appreciate the elders letting us go into depth in this chapter, and I think it's been good. It's been good for me, and I think hopefully it's been good for all of us as we take a closer look at this study. Before we begin again, let's go ahead and just read the first seven verses to kind of set the stage for our study, and then we'll go ahead and, like we said, hopefully finish up looking at these. Romans chapter 7, beginning with verse 1. Let every soul be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and the authorities that exist are appointed by God. Therefore, whoever resists the authority resists the ordinance of God, and those who resist will bring judgment on themselves. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. Do you want to be unafraid of the authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same. For he is God's minister to you for good. But if you do evil, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain. For he is God's minister, an avenger to execute wrath on him who practices evil. Therefore you must be subject, not only because of wrath, but also for conscience' sake. For because of this, you also pay taxes. For they are God's ministers, attending continually to this very thing. Render therefore to all their due, taxes to whom taxes are due, customs to whom customs, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. And so there we have the basis of a lot of principles that we have, or that the Christian has, as far as our relationship and our attitude toward the government. We begin by looking at the rule that was set forth in these passages, as well as a couple of other passages that we've looked at as well. And it was stressed two times by Paul here: let every soul be subject to the governing authorities. And then there again in verse 5, he says, therefore you must be subject. And so this is a very clear command. There's really not any way to get around it. We must be subject. Then we have the reason. What is the reason that we must be subject? Well, governing authorities have been appointed by God. They are put there by God. And so, therefore, he expects us to obey them. And to resist government is to resist God. And I think this is a very important point. And we've stressed it a couple of times during our study. But as we continue with the things that we are going to be looking at this morning and the practical applications that we are going to be trying to apply to maybe some of the more conservative aspects, or people who would consider themselves conservative and their attitude toward the government, we need to understand that to resist the government in the ways that we will be discussing, I believe, is to resist God. And so we need to make sure that we understand what we are doing, because I believe to find ourselves in a position where we are resisting God and bringing his judgment upon ourselves, you know, that's putting ourselves in a very dangerous, precarious position. And we need to understand what we are doing when we begin resisting authority, and really make sure that we are doing so with God's authority. And then we have the exception to the rule. And as we said, it's not when government is oppressive. Paul lived under a very oppressive government. Early Christians lived under a very oppressive government. Jesus himself, when he was here on earth, was under an oppressive government. A government that I do not believe our government compares to their government. And so while we might view our government as oppressive, that's not the exception to the rule. And we need to understand that. The only exception to the rule is that we must obey God rather than men. And there, you know, Acts chapter 5, verses 27 through 29, and we have another example earlier where the apostles, when the government was at odds with their duty as Christians, their mission as apostles and spreading the gospel, then they went against the government. And we have that statement there at the very end of that passage in verse 29. We ought to obey God rather than men. And so that's the exception to the rule. You know, when the government's decrees, when their mandates go contrary to what God has commanded us, or God has given us through examples in His Word, then therefore we have the authority and the obligation to go against the government, because we must obey God rather than men. And even then, again, we stressed this last week, we only have the authority to break that single instance that contradicts God's law. We don't then have the authority to begin overthrowing the government, to break other laws and protest to this decree that goes against God's will. We don't have authority to do any of those things. We don't see the apostles taking part in any such things. We don't see Christ doing that either. And so there is no authority to break any other laws other than the ones that contradict what God has told us to do. And so as we begin looking at some of these other things, I think a very important point that we need to bring out, and I was listening to a lesson, again, that Stephen Russell had preached actually last week at Pepper Road, and he brought out this point, and he said some very eloquent, or some very good things. Probably said them a lot better than I could say them. But we need to understand that a God-given right is not the same thing as a God-given commandment. And I believe the lines have been blurred in the conservative as well as, you know, the more liberal groups in understanding this concept. Just because God has given us a right, it does not bear the same weight as the commands that God has given us. They're just not the same thing. There are many things being said, and they're being said even by Christians. If you've been on social media with, you know, listening to Christians, and I'm not saying anybody here, but you don't have to travel very far before you find Christians promoting the idea that if God has given us the right to do anything, do something, then the government has no authority to stop us from doing that. And therefore, we have the authority to break the laws of the land in order to take part in this activity, or to do this thing that we want to do, or to not do something that we feel like that we shouldn't be doing. But there is no scriptural basis for this whatsoever. The scriptures clearly teach that a Christian's authority to exercise our rights, and we're talking about our rights, we're not talking about the commands that God has given us, but the authority for us to exercise our rights is always dependent upon how it affects our example and ability to spread the gospel. Paul is going to kind of go into that in the next chapter. You know, he takes it to the extreme, really, when we look at 1 Corinthians chapter, or, you know, when he talks about it in the next chapter, but then when we look at 1 Corinthians chapter 8 and verse 13, here we're talking about the Christian's right to eat meat. But he says in this chapter, therefore, if food makes my brother to stumble, I will never eat meat lest I make my brother stumble. Do we have the right to eat meat? Yes. Is it an explicit right spelled out in the scriptures that you can eat meat? Yes. We see that spelled out explicitly in the New Testament. We have the right to eat meat. So this is a God-given right that you and I have. But do we have the authority to act upon that right regardless of the circumstances? No. We do not. There are circumstances under which we as Christians must deny ourselves the God-given right to eat meat. And to what extent should we be willing to do that? To never eat it again. And so clearly, a God-given right is not the same thing as a God-given command. We just cannot compare the two. And then there in the next chapter, Romans chapter 14 and verse 16, you know, he discusses some of these things, but then he says, therefore, do not let your good be evil, be spoken of as evil. You know, people have an attitude, well, I can do it. There's nothing wrong with it. I'm going to do it. I don't care what anybody says. I believe that goes contrary to this passage here. There's an instance in which we can be doing good, and that good be evil spoken of, and therefore we need to look at that situation. And if there's a way that maybe we can redo some things, or maybe, you know, not do some things or something to keep our good from being spoken of as evil, then we have that obligation clearly spelled out in Romans chapter 14. So there are instances where we have maybe the right to do something that we just simply cannot take part in that. The idea that rights have the same weight as commands is just simply not scriptural. Do you remember what we read a couple of weeks ago in 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 15 through 17? It says, for this is the will of God. And here again, we're talking about our responsibilities and association with the government. It says, for this is the will of God, that by doing good, you may put to silence the ignorance of foolish men. As free, yet not using liberty as a cloak for vice, but as bondservants of God. Honor all people, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the king. Have you ever thought about that phrase, how that we could use our liberty as a cloak for vice? Here is something that we as Christians have the liberty to do, but yet we can use that liberty in a way that's going to be detrimental to the cause of Christ. We can use it as a cloak for vice. And so there again, I mean, this is directly in context with our relationship to the government, that there are things that we can do that we have liberty to do. And, you know, I'm not sure I understand this whole phrase and exactly what he's talking about, but I do understand there's something that we have liberty to do that we should be careful to do, because it can become evil. And so we really need to understand that concept when we're talking about this passage. And so we look at practical examples today. And so I'm going to go through four different things that I've encountered on social media. And I'm sure many of you, if you're on social media, have encountered them as well. And these things are being talked about. There's been a lot of discussions about some of these attitudes. And I think we need to be on the lookout, and we need to be very careful in how we respond and the things that we promote, the things that we like on Facebook, because we can find ourselves in opposition to God. Did anybody see anything like this around the 4th of July? If you are canceling your plans on the 4th of July because the government told you to, you're missing the whole point of Independence Day. Now you read that and you go, that's right, right on. I'm going to click like on that. I don't like the government restricting my right to have a gathering. But is that a Christian attitude? I don't think we have the authority. I know we don't have the authority to promote anything like this. If the government told us that we couldn't gather on Independence Day as Christians, we have the obligation not to gather, to do it in a way that is within the restrictions the government gave. That's our obligation. And if we hit like, if we say right on, if we say I agree to anything like that, I believe you're in opposition to God. You're resisting God. What about this one? I saw this one and I saw a Christian shared it and said, good for them. Here you have the city of Los Angeles banned fireworks. There weren't any fireworks displays because of the restrictions with the virus. And so people then took it into their own hands and they started shooting fireworks all over Los Angeles. I'm sure if you watched any of the national news, you saw pictures or videos or something, you know, with Los Angeles and fireworks being shot off all over Los Angeles. Very, very pretty sight. It's really neat to look at. But, what it says here, freedom will not be stopped. Los Angeles banned fireworks, so patriots fired them off illegally all across the city. Can we say good for them? Can we like this post? Can we share it? Maybe just share it and not say anything about it, but just share it. I think that then, leads others to believe we agree with it. Now, as an American, could I get behind this? I probably could. As a Christian, I can't. I simply can't get behind this. We live in a culture of rebellion. I believe that. It's really almost built into our society and our country. I mean, you look back at the Boston Tea Party and how that's taught in schools and how that's held up. And, you take it all the way back to the beginning of our country, and rebellion is built in. If we don't like it, we're going to overthrow it. And so our society is really, in my opinion, built upon this idea of rebelling against authority. And then there's this idea that this patriotic rebellion. I'm a patriot, I'm rebelling as a patriot. This patriotic rebellion is somehow on par or equal with godliness. It's our God-given duty to rebel against oppressive government. And we see that working in to the language that we hear, the world say. But then we start hearing it from Christians as well. Someone said, if you find yourself rebelling against the governing authorities to protect your rights, you may do that to look like a Democrat, Republican, conservative, or liberal. You may do it to look like a revolutionary or a patriot or any number of other political positions. What you don't look like is Jesus. If you're rebelling against authority because they are infringing upon your rights, as we said last week, you're going to be put in the category. And I believe there's just as many conservatives rebelling as there are liberals rebelling. But we're going to be put in one of these categories. But where we're not going to be put is the category of a follower of Christ. So we need to understand that.
Let me comment. When I'm going to test that statement in view of what we can read in the scriptures. Okay, the Roman government, they take Paul into custody. And now they don't know he's a Roman citizen. Got nothing to do with being a Christian, but they don't know he's a Roman citizen. And so he rebels. He argues. And this is the reason I want to point this out is and I think you've done an excellent job, by the way. But what a point that I think the Bible teaches clearly, and it's I've always thought Gerald, because I've taught the same thing here through the years, has always been correct by trying to make sure we didn't make laws where God hadn't made them. The right to protest, or to, you know, you look the word up and it just really just means to speak against. You know, and so obviously you got different levels of it. Jesus asked, why'd you hit me? You know, they hit him in the face. Jesus said, why'd you hit me? Protest. Paul says, they got him, and they've listened to scourging, they've listened to police brutality. So they didn't have a right. He was a good guy. Here they gonna beat him. Police brutality. So Paul says to the guy, to an official, do you have a right to be hitting me like this? Well, the guy doesn't know what's going on. So he goes to his superiors, his commanding officers, and he's going, hey, we got an issue here. This guy, see, and so, okay, if you find yourself rebelling against the governing authorities to protect your rights as a citizen, you may do, in other words, that sounds good too, and there's some truth to it, but if what it doesn't speak to is that you do actually have a right, because the apostle did it, is the reason I know Jesus did it, Paul did it. It's why I know I can do it. And so there are times where, not as a Christian, see, not those rights where we obey God rather than man, but those where God has given us the authority to act as citizens and to take advantage of those rights, like calling the cops, things like that. Well, this is one. And when we rebel, now again, not take a gun, but in the, you know, when we protest, the apostles and Christ and them told us how to do it the right way. You pointed that out clear. And so, but I guess what I mean is there's some truth to that, and I know what he's saying, but it does, it looks like Jesus when you do it the right way.
Yeah, and rebelling, I guess, I looked at that and I changed some of the things because I was trying to say the things that you've said. And, you know, I pointed out a couple of times that Paul used the law to his advantage. And I believe definitely we can use the law to our advantage. And I believe Christ did as well. But when I say rebelling in a way where I'm breaking the law, it is what, you know, it's what I'm thinking of when rebelling. You know, when, if I'm using the law to my advantage, I'm not rebelling. I may be protesting.
No, what I'm saying is rebelling against the governing authorities might encompass a situation like Paul's. What I mean is God hadn't asked us to, if the police is beating us, in the wrong way. See, we can protest that. He hadn't commanded us to take that beating. We may have to, but he hadn't commanded us to take it. There might be times we take it. That's what we see by the, you know, from the apostles in Jesus' name. There might be time we take it.
And if we Jesus, if we can get out of it within the bounds of the law, then we're
able to. But the point I'm making is here these officials. See, we're supposed to obey the one sent by them too. But when they, I guess, and I see your point, and all I'm wanting to point out, because I've listened carefully through it, and I wanted to make that point, is that we, when he's authorized us to, and I'm using this word protest and rebel just by definition, you meaning when you take up, you know, do something, you know,
we're breaking the law.
Yeah.
Breaking the law
fight
is what
it, well, fight it in a...
So are you saying that we can break the law to protect our rights?
Break the law?
Yeah.
No, I mean protest or rebel.
Is protest in there?
No, I just, or I'm going to use that, I'm using that word rebel.
Okay.
To, you know, to resist it. To resist.
Okay. There may, like I said, the definition of rebelling, and I hope I didn't give the wrong idea. I'm talking about breaking the law. Breaking the law. Not protest. And there may be a form of rebelling, if we look at the definition, that would not encompass breaking the law. But what I mean by this statement is, if we break the law. So, that's my idea of rebelling. You know, a rebellious child is, you know, I've given an instruction to a child, they're not doing that instruction, they're being rebellious. And so,
You saw what I was saying.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, yeah.
And I agree with you.
Yeah, I understand.
You said you were trying to communicate that same point.
Yeah.
That's all, I
just don't want to give the wrong impression, but that's what I mean by rebelling in that instance. So.
Shane, on that point, I just bringing this up because I've thought about this, and maybe somebody could help answer it. This may be along the lines that you're speaking about. And it may be a totally different point, I don't know. If a person is exercising their constitutional right, as they say, is that, which by the way is part of the government, the government's responsible for that. Those people that are supposed to be upholding those statutes or whatever.
Yeah.
Isn't there a sense in which they overstep them when they teach us or try to make us do things contrary to our governing laws?
Yeah.
You see my point?
I see your point, and I was going to discuss that here in just a minute. There's where we're going to have to make some hard decisions.
Right.
We're going to have to make, and even to that point, I'm thinking about, you look at our nation in the early days where, the citizens rebelled against England, and now we've got this new government here. At what point do we swap our allegiances as a Christian? There's an area there that I can't say here. And so there were some hard decisions made by some Christians. And you see it all throughout, the first century, there were governments coming in and conquering and everything. At what point then do we owe our allegiance to this government? That's a hard question.
And my point is, do you just take their word? Just because they decide to change something that really they're supposed to be abiding by. That's the grounds, that's the foundation of our government, the things that we believe and follow, as far as the government's concerned.
Yeah.
Is it just because they say it?
Yeah.
Is that the rule? Or is it the rule that they're supposed to be?
Those are some hard questions.
You see,
there's some hard questions there. And that was I wanted to kind of lay some groundwork and then kind of deal with that a little bit, because there's going to be some issues and maybe even more so as we go along. And it seems like our government is being more at odds. Your state government is at odds now with the national government. Who do we follow now? There's going to be some hard decisions being made there. Yeah.
It's so unclear.
So we've got to decide at that point, and there's going to be some hard decisions probably in the future. And so that's just going to be a base, in my opinion, a basis by basis decision, I think. That
one of the best lessons ever preached right here from that pulpit was from Brother Wes Brown. It concerned Daniel, Meshach, Abednego, and Shadrach. And he went through every detail of it.
Yeah.
And this is a man whose country was overtaken by another government. Taken out of there, down with the old flag, up with a new, and taught a new language.
Yeah.
And he went through the detail. And even in this, I'll say this. And this is from chapter 3 of Daniel. Now here's Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego. They were fixing to be thrown into a fiery furnace.
Yeah.
Because they wouldn't do what the king wanted. And they said, our God will deliver us. But there was one thing that they said, a lot of people overlooked. And in verse 18, after they explained why they were doing what they were doing to the king, they turned around and said, but if not, referring back to if God doesn't save us, but if he doesn't. So there's a chance that we're going to face something that we're doing that's right.
Yeah.
God will deliver us even in death if it comes to us being killed for obeying God. It may be that he doesn't here on this earth. And this country, we got freedoms beyond what we're up here in. What's being taught, what we're studying now is going on in other countries.
Yeah.
As we're sitting here in freedom.
So we need to prepare for it. And this is why I wanted to study this in depth, so that we can be prepared to decide how we're going to react as we are faced with some of these things. The next thing to kind of get us into what Jeremy was talking there. What about face masks? You know, a couple of weeks ago or last week, we had this ordinance where the governor mandated that we wear face masks in this state. And so you have things like this being said. This is a Christian. This is a Christian saying this. Food for thought. The supreme law in our nation is the Constitution, and within it we have been allowed to buck the system, so to speak, whenever government does things that it's not allowed to do. What we currently have is a massive outreach of our current state governments. Most of those who are choosing not to wear a mask are standing for the liberty that our Constitution affords us. If a stand is not made each time, the government will whittle away at it until all of a sudden we don't have the freedoms we currently enjoy, such as our freedom to worship. I don't believe it to be sinful to stand for liberty when the supreme law allows me to. And then you have this statement as well. This issue, and this was in response or in agreement with the previous comment, this issue is more fundamental. In this country, we have laws defining how new laws are made. If that set process is ignored, then it is not a law. If it is not a law, then we are not required to follow it. If we are not legally required to do it, then Romans 13 does not apply to it. I would argue that there are other reasons and verses that should be considered, but at the point that the whole follow the laws of the land argument is invalid because it isn't a law of the land. And so this is specifically in response to our governor mandating the wearing of facial coverings. No, we're not going to do it because it goes against, other things. And I don't believe these specific arguments hold up in this case. I mean, how do we as Christians react when the governor tells us that we must wear a mask? Is this our reaction? Do some see it as overstepping the law? Maybe. I know some do, but maybe it is. I don't really know the whole, I'm not well-versed enough in our laws, and I don't know that anybody is because our laws are so confounded that I'm not sure anybody could really know. But when you look at it, and what's my reaction going to be to the governor saying that I've got to wear a face mask? Well, do you suppose that during the time of Paul, here you have the Roman Empire, you have governors and, they conquer a nation, they set up a governor, you've got this whole other nation then that's folded into the Roman Empire, people ruling that. Do you think that this same sort of thing was not an issue during the time of Paul? I believe it was. I believe it had to be. Where maybe some things were being done that were in opposition to maybe what Caesar or the Roman government as a whole were stating. And so we have to address that in some way. But how do we address that? Well, in 1 Peter, there we have Peter saying, therefore, submit yourselves to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake, whether to the king as supreme or to the governor as to those who are sent by him for the punishment of evildoers and for the praise of those who do good. And so, you know, in this passage, he's not saying, well, our allegiance is just to that one supreme authority. You know, we're in the United States. You can take the supreme authority back to the Constitution, I guess, would be where we would take it back to. You know, but, you know, you've got the king as supreme. You know, under a monarchy, the king is supreme. You've got his authority. But whether it's to him or maybe it's to a governor that he's put into place, we owe it to both. Now, when those two oppose, what do? There again, that's Rodney, or not Rodney, Jeremy's question. In the instance of wearing a face mask, I'm going to wear a face mask. Because I think that's the best thing to do. I think that's going to be the best example for me as a Christian.
Shannon?
Yes.
You heard Paul say, Caesar was the law of the land. Even though he had people like Felix and others that ruled in particular areas or provinces or the land of the whole, all his kingdom was divided to other kings. Sometimes they made decisions that Caesar probably wouldn't have made had he made that decision in birth. Yet, the decision that Felix and others made carried the same weight as it would have carried had Caesar made it in person. Even though it might have been a little bit different what Caesar would have made had he made it in person. All right, in Acts 25, at verse 8, Paul said, neither against the law of the Jews, neither against the temple, nor yet against Caesar have I offended anything at all. And then Paul said, whatsoever things you both heard and read and learned and seen in me, do.
Okay, that's a good point. And so we've got these different tiers that we are going to owe allegiance to. And like I said, I don't know that they're all necessarily going to agree. You know, us wearing a mask is not forcing us to break a law, you know, a federal law.
They use the law in advantage, yet he didn't offend it.
You know, if our wearing a mask is going to cause us to break a federal law, then we've got a decision to make. Which law are we going to uphold? But in my opinion, it's not asking me to break a federal law, any law whatsoever. And so I'm going to wear a mask because of that. And, you know, when we look at the statements like we just read, and you know, people then start, you know, I think they use arguments like that to their advantage, to the point that they're trying to prove. Because if it was a federal mandate, you would have just as many people talking about state rights. You know, back when I was in school, they taught us that the government was founded on state rights, right? Where the states have the rights to mandate certain things within their borders. And so, you know, when you go back to the Constitution, you go back to states' rights, then, you know, a lot of their arguments there, I think, are not valid to that. But then you go back, you know, and look at the authors of the Constitution. And you look at Thomas Jefferson. Probably everybody in here knows who Thomas Jefferson is, one of the authors of the Constitution. He was there. He helped do it. Later on, became president. And so, you know, here he's trying to make the Louisiana Purchase, which was going to be very beneficial for our nation. But yet, he felt like what he was doing was going against the Constitution. Now, there is some argument whether or not it actually did. Some people say, well, no, he didn't go against the Constitution. But he himself believed it. He thought that he was going against the Constitution, yet he did it anyway. And he wrote, in the meantime, we must ratify and pay our money as we have treated for a thing beyond the Constitution and rely on the nation to sanction an act done for its great good without its previous authority. And so we have the highest office in the land going against our founding document. You know, he knew he was doing it. He did it anyway. And so things get difficult there, don't they? So what we have to do is make some tough decisions. But we cannot allow our good to be evil spoken of. And we must at all times profess godliness, profess Christ in everything that we do. We have the question, well, what if the government prohibits us from meeting to partake of the Lord's Supper? 6 or 8 months ago, we thought that this would be a question that we would never have to deal with, right? But we've had to deal with it. The elders have had to make some decisions about this. And I understand that there are some instances, I think, where a congregation maybe should decide we're not meeting this Sunday. And, you know, maybe congregations, you know, I can't speak to every decision that was made by every congregation all over the country. But I believe some rolled over too quickly. You know, what you had the elders here doing were looking for ways to still allow us to meet, yet stay within the regulation that the government has given us. And there were some pretty extreme measures that were put into place in order to do that. And so what you didn't have happen here is the government say you can't meet, the elders throw up their hands and okay, we all go home for 2 months, 3 months. And if it had gotten to the point, which I think maybe, I don't know, maybe one Sunday it was before the car thing was legalized. I don't know. I can't remember. But what if it gets to that point? Hard decisions. And I would say at this point, if we can do that, I think we should.
What are you asking?
What's our response? You know, we're looking at, this is a, I'm kind of bringing it around to the other side, I guess. What is our reaction? How are we going to react to all these different instances? How are we going to react to this?
Question that needs to be raised in this congregation.
Yeah. And I don't think there was a lot of thought given to it, but congregations, other places, there was. And there was a lot that rolled over. Easily. And like I said, there may be congregations that were, you know, we have to take into account different things. And I'm not trying to condemn any specific congregation. But
them that didn't meet need condemned.
Yeah.
There's churches, and I know, you know, our meeting in the parking lot, I don't even consider, there's nothing, that's, you know, it's a little different, but most of the reading, I could, you know, Jesus and them were outside in mountains, and so I don't consider it anything, just a modern way of meeting, but people who shut the, you know, when they got parking lots to meet in, we could get 100 feet apart if we wanted to. We got loud, you know, with the technology we have, we're not almost, I don't even know how a church could justify it. Not. And we got money piled to the ceiling, so I don't know why churches would go home, not me. They got parking lots on acres, you know, like it's just unfathomable to me. They need condemned because nothing's happened yet to keep God's people from meeting. Got little churches with 4 or 5 people in it, done shut the doors. You can get one over there, you know. And the reason I say that, Shane, I battled with one.
Yeah.
Sent, let, you know, wrote the issues, and that they don't really have authority to the government don't, and they don't, not to break bread.
Yeah, yeah, and I think you're right. I mean, the congregation with five people in it, I don't know that there was any mandate that limited less than 10 people.
Exactly. And so
I mean, you're not doing anything there.
Close because you might get sick something. Ain't a good reason not to meet and break bread.
I agree with you, and I agree that there, you know, that there were a lot of congregations that did that. You know, I do know, but you know, I hate to make a blanket statement without knowing every detail of every, and that's why I wanted to make that caveat. I'm not condemning because I just, you know, I don't know all the situations, but I do know there were some. There were some that rolled over too easy. And so we're out of time. We didn't get to the taxes. The taxes are not going to take long to cover. So we ought to cover that pretty quickly next week. Again, I really appreciate the comments, the questions, the challenges. You know, I don't mind somebody challenging me. That's fine. I think we ought to be ready to discuss and to defend and to do whatever. And so if you've got an issue, let me know, and we'll try to work that out because I want to work it out. And if anything I've said that you disagree with, just let me know, and we'll try to do that. Again, I appreciate everybody's attention. We'll go ahead and swap things over. It will take us just a minute, and then we'll begin our song service.